Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic Bee Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.theorganicbee.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView, or you can contact me directly at June Stoyer. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com.
Today, I will be speaking to Mary Gail Meister from DenverBees.org on how to legalize backyard beekeeping. Regardless of the fact that there is a tremendous decline in the bee population due to colony collapse disorder, amongst other diseases, there are still many areas where backyard beekeeping has been banned. In many cases, it's mostly due to lack of knowledge about bees, as well as fear of lawsuits. The plight to legalize beekeeping in a community is just not something that many beekeepers want to undertake. The consequences beekeepers that challenge these type of laws face range from risk of being fined to actual confiscation of their bees, which can also be a huge financial loss. There are some areas that may even impose incarceration. However, every area is different. Mary Gail Meister is a beekeeper that sought to do this for the city of Denver. It was a very trying process, but one she was determined to see changed. Her efforts led her to establish and organize DenverBee.org. Ms. Meister successfully changed the city's ordinance, but also found that there is a great deal of responsibility that comes with such a privilege. So I'd like to welcome Mary Gail Meister, founder and president of DenverBee.org. Welcome and good afternoon, Mary Gail.
Hi, June. Good afternoon.
Hi. Hey, that rhymes. Welcome to the show. You are someone that many people are just in admiration of because basically you took the plunge. And there are a lot of people, especially last year, New York City lifted the ban on beekeeping, and there were so many people that secretly took care of bees on their rooftops or on other parcels of land where they were given permission to do so, even though it was against the city's laws. And from what I understand, the reason that beekeeping was against the law, basically it was kind of tossed in there with a list of other bans regarding certain animals. I guess, it just snowballed and they kind of shoved beekeeping in there. And then once the ban was lifted, it's interesting, and there's so many different organizations that have popped up. It's really, really just taken off, and it's just a tremendous, tremendous opportunity for people to really connect with nature and also do something in regards to the fact that the bee population is rapidly declining. Today we're going to talk about all the different things that you went through and some of the things that you learned along the way. Did you grow up having bees as a kid, or how did you become
interested
in them?
Yeah, the grandparents did. They were in the very yard that there are bees now. As you said, the urban area was encouraged to give up all that was from a farming or from the agricultural community. That all kind of went by the wayside. And then I think with the advent of the news that bees were declining, people started realizing the connection. Certainly there was probably a small population that started realizing the connection between bees and our food source and how we had become so disconnected from our food source. And at the same time, there was the beginning awareness of laws that had been passed, methodologies that we're putting in places to keep nature under control, that they were having an adverse effect on us. So you have all of these things starting to coalesce. Then you have the group that's, you know, promoting green and green awareness. So you have all of that going on, and it was just converging, and it was going to come to a point where either they were going to push it all away and say, no, you can't implement any of those practices such as beekeeping or having chickens in your backyard or using your lawn for something other than lawn. They were forced to a point because people were starting to challenge that. Wait a minute. We want to take back some of our control over what we're eating, where we're getting it, We want to keep it local. And so I think all of that started to converge. And my mother was the one who had noticed that there, you know, there weren't bees in the backyard, and she certainly doesn't use any chemicals. And she started noticing that they, probably about 10 years ago. And so we put bees in the backyard, and then we have a number in Denver you can call, and I'm sure a lot of large municipalities do, that you can call and ask general questions. And I called in and said, hey, what do I need to do to put these back there? And they said, nothing. So then I just went forward and put them in the yard, and that's, of course, the cease and desist letter came and said I had to get rid of them. And Denver, at that point, we were about to host a Democratic National Convention, and they were perpetuating this notion of how green they were, and the mayor at the time wanted to plant 1 million trees. And it's like, you know what, we can't simultaneously, you know, be after our community with harsh chemicals and at the same time trying to make it green. Something has to give. And so that's what I suppose fueled it more than anything, because I realized that there were other people that were very excited, very encouraged, and feeling very empowered about doing that. They wanted to bring it back, realizing that we had become very disconnected through no fault of our own, but cities are growing, and we want a certain look to the city, want a certain kind of organization to the city. All of that agriculture, direct agriculture, was being pushed away. You know, we were having lawns, a couple geraniums, and the occasional ornamental bird feeder. And so now, I think that's people started questioning, why am I keeping this lawn, and is there a better way to use the ground? And then they're putting in flowers, you know, they're putting in things that are leading to healthier environments, hopefully using less pesticides. And so I think that's where this has all come about. If you have suddenly you have an existing methodology of urbanizing everything, spraying everything looking uniform, to a group that's saying, wait a minute, we can't really rely on the bioavailability of the food we're getting. I'm going to plant my own tomatoes. And then they realize that planting a garden, you can't forget the pollinators, because we've used so many insecticides and herbicides and pesticides that we've killed that group. We're killing that huge group of, 10 million extant species, because we like to have a sort of comfort in our nature. We don't like to really deal with nature in what it is. And so I think those two groups clashed, and hopefully those that are into more sensible, environmental friendly living are going to just keep winning. But I think it's just step by step that they're having to regain a tremendous amount of real estate that they've lost to, you know, larger corporations selling convenience of, you know, you can have this great backyard and it can be bug-free, but people don't realize what bug-free ultimately means, that you've killed your environment. And I think it's just it's a paradox.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And people are spending so much money because they want pretty flowers, and they want to have vegetable gardens because they want to have their own fresh herbs, or they want to have their own fresh tomatoes. But, you know, having a vegetable garden means that you need these pollinators. And it's just interesting. So you called up, and they said that you could just put them in your back, and then you get hit with a cease and desist.
Right. And that was, you know, that was very maddening because of the effort. And, you know, it just made no sense. It's like you have to give me a solid argument as to why I can't have these. They're already in the backyard, elevate waning. I'm not habituating mountain lions, because I want to keep, you know, the population of squirrels down. It's like, no, bees are here. They're few, but they're here.
Did they give you any particular reason? I mean, when you saw this letter, what was the first thing, other than, you know, getting a knot in your stomach, what was the first thing that you thought?
The absurdity of it. You know, that I didn't have a big mountain lion back there trying to keep the squirrels down. It just was a little overwhelming, because I thought of just the debate that would ensue, you know, and feeling like a little overwhelmed by that. That was probably the biggest. And when I did call the zoning officer, he said, you know what, this is, and he didn't even have a reason. He just said, look, this has been on the books forever. It was basically because Denver, which I'm sure a lot of municipalities, they were taking the agriculture out of the city, because Denver's not that old. I mean, it's 150 years old, but at the time, I mean, people were moving in here. They were homesteading. They were taking care of themselves. They were having gardens. They were having bees, probably not as much as in the East, but they were doing all of that. They were taking care of their own homes, whether it was through eggs, whether it was through having, you know, an ungulate that was milking, be it goat or cow. They wanted to move away from that. They wanted a metropolitan city.
Now, it's interesting that you mention that, because that is basically what happened with lawn care in America. We started off as this society where everybody had animals, and, you know, you didn't have, you had gardens, of course, but it was just, it seemed like a waste of land to have a patch of lawn that didn't provide any utility, that was just there for the sake of being there. And it started to become fashionable, and that's what basically gave birth to the whole lawn care industry. And it's just kind of interesting that this is basically what has happened throughout history. Even when we went from the old world to the new world, people wanted to get away from the medieval age where, for example, your wealth was actually measured by how much pepper you owned. So many different little things, and they just wanted to get away from that entirely and make that transition. So it's interesting that, you know, once again, new transition. So let's get away from everything that works, and let's start just going to the deep end. It's very typical. Now, when you got the cease and desist letter, what was the first course of action that you took? Did you contact the very people that gave you the A-OK, or did you contact an attorney? What did you do?
Well, I went to the zoning office because I could apply for a hearing. So I could get a hearing for a variance so that I could be considered a special case and allowed to keep the bees. And again, I thought that was rather absurd because I could sense there was just a burgeoning population of beekeepers. It was going to happen. It was moving across the country. You know, I could have been the catalyst, but there was going to be a big reaction, and it wasn't a person. It was a movement that was happening, because I think it was one of those things that coalesced, and people were starting, again, going back to that, people were starting to realize they didn't know what they were eating. They didn't know what was happening to the soil it was growing in. All sorts of laws were being made about seeds, and people were feeling, I think, definitely, and are still feeling a sense of disconnect and loss, and certainly they don't have control over food. And I think that's frightening, it's maddening, and I think it provokes action in some people. So I think that that's where it was like, no, Denver is perpetuating that they're green, then they're going to have to stand on their words. And beekeeping is certainly, in and of it to itself, it's innocuous. There's a bunch of bees. They don't care about what you're doing. You know, they focus only on plants. They don't kill or maim anything to live, and they only help the environment. They are only a positive. They're an attribute. Just our wasps are. We like bees, but we don't like wasps. Some people, and they put the wasp captures up because they think one is good and one isn't good. And it's like, no, it's synergy. They are all a component in your ecosystem called your backyard, and you have to consider them all and how you're living. And so I think that that's what fueled it. It was that this is unnecessary. This is unnecessary that people are being covert about it. And the one thing I did realize quickly is that after it passed and it went through a series of committees and people were there and they were writing it up and, you know, the zoning committee. And I think that Denver had that. We had that in our corner, that there were people in zoning that were sensitive and they were sympathetic. City council members were great. I mean, none of them are, you know, city council members generally, you know, they're not steeped heavily in the sciences. It's in the social skills of government and law and zoning ordinances and those types of things. It's not really in the hardcore sciences, but they all listened. And there were 17 speakers, and each one of them got up, and this was pro-bee. There were no, there wasn't anybody there that was opposed. And so I think we have that in our favor. I think that there are some municipalities that haven't had the friendly reception. But there's a channel that we have here as I'm sure most municipalities do, and you can listen to city council members. And I just happened to be listening, and this was after the I had gotten a cease and desist, and there was a couple that I thought were that might be sensitive and sympathetic to this, to my plight. And so I approached one, and he deferred it to another city council member. Her name is Peggy Lehman. And she had a couple of calls after had been the situation that I was in had been in the paper. And she took up the charge. She asked me for a current ordinance of another municipality, and then the ball started rolling. But, again, I think it was only because in our government, in our zoning, that there were people that were very sympathetic to it. I think there were people that were interested, and they didn't want to see it thwarted. So I think that it was definitely, I may have been the catalyst, but the reaction afterwards was to really be noted, because there were people in those positions that were in agreement that it should be passed.
After that, now, things kind of took a little turn. And you actually,
I have to tell you, they said after 4.5 hours we sat there in city council meeting on November 17th on Monday, they said, finally at the end, they said, yeah, okay, you can keep your bees. 2 boxes in the back third of your lot. Well, when they said that, my heart just dropped. I was elated, but then I realized juxtaposed to that was an enormous responsibility, because they didn't ask for permits, they didn't ask for fees, they asked nothing. And I realized they had put 100% of the responsibility on us to be ambassadors to the community and not show up on the radar as having a cavalier attitude or being very disrespectful of neighbors. We couldn't show up on the radar for that at all. So it was almost simultaneous that it was like, oh, wow, we have a huge responsibility, and we are beekeepers, by and large, are just absolutely under-organized, because, and it's nobody's fault, but the groups that had existed prior, you know, they were in communities that were probably a little bit more rural. They were on those edges. They were on the periphery of urban versus suburban versus rural, and so they were keeping them, and they were just doing it, and they weren't bothering anybody because nobody was challenging them out there. There was horses, there were goats, there were fields, and now all of a sudden, again, you have the population of inner city dwellers going, wait a minute, you know, I don't know where any of this food's coming from, and there's, you know, the things that are being sprayed. So all of this, again, is starting to churn. So I started the group because I thought we need to have a solid track record to show that we are being cognizant, that we are providing ongoing education to these people that want to do it. They might not all be steeped heavily in sciences. You know, there's a myriad of people that are attracted to beekeeping. And so I realized that I needed a fixed objective, and that objective was healthy, sustainable beekeeping, but we needed to be very flexible in our approach as to how that. And what I mean by that is that there was a couple of things that needed to be protected. I felt what needed to be protected was the feral community, because if all of these people were going to be bringing in new bees, we don't import bees anymore. So we have a limited gene pool. So we had to protect the feral colonies, and I felt that we had to protect those that had been beekeeping and those who had had many years of experience. They also needed to be protected, because how I saw it is you were going to get these new beekeepers and they were going to be asking questions. And so I have to go back. What I was going to state, that I was really dedicated and still am, that every month we have a speaker that's either published or from the research community, from the academic community at large, because this new burgeoning group of beekeepers could ask a million questions. Those people, whether it's Dr. Tu or Dr. Connor or Dr. Shepherd, their whole world is about questioning and examining. There's nothing you're going to throw at them that's going to knock them off the rock. They're at the top. They're like at Everest. But what could happen, I saw, is this burgeoning group of people with the limited number of those who'd been beekeeping, they were going to get questions. And these people had been keeping bees for 20, 30 years. They'd always been doing it. It had worked. They hadn't challenged what they'd been doing because, again, it wasn't the influx of information that it could be perceived as a challenge. And we didn't want those who'd been in the community to feel challenged in a negative way. It's like, wait a minute, I've been doing this for 20 years.
Oh,
you know?
Of course. And then you did something that I thought was extremely, extremely smart. And you began to incorporate some of the community leaders into the bee community, such as with some of the people that protect the community from fire and theft.
So yeah, we have some fire departments that have beehives.
I think that that's
so
just
we're,
such
it's kind
a
of, it's
great...
It's a little bit of a touchy ground right now because we were going to, in any fire station in Denver that wanted a hive, we were going to, again, going back to the ambassadorship, we were going, the group, the Denver Bee Group, was going to give that, donate that to them, donate them the bees and the equipment, because a lot of them have, especially in Denver, they have places, they have yards or grassy areas.
Mm-hmm.
They could put bees there. They could be ambassadors. People, beehives would start to show up, maybe not as ubiquitous as park benches, but pretty close to it. And when you see something and it's in a positive light, and it's certainly with fire, that's going to be looked at in a positive light. People are going to be respectful of it then, realizing that we come into contact with bees every day, spring, summer, and fall, and we don't die from stings. And so putting a box back there is not going to increase your chance in your community of something adversely happening. So we did that.
It was
we
such
adopted
a clever
highway.
Move. I was going to say, it's such a clever move because the thing is that, I mean, how many times do you see on the news or you read an article in the paper where somebody had a situation where their cat got stuck in a tree or there was a dog that was rescued, I can't remember where, but recently, and lo and behold, the fire department came to the rescue. So it just kind of made perfect sense that you incorporated the fire department into the bee community. I just thought that that was really very smart, and it just makes perfect sense.
Well, it's a little slow in coming because, like I said, they can't accept donated goods. So it's there's still a lot of semantics around that one. But, yeah, that's fun. I mean, even we meet at a police station, Denver, at Denver's District 1 police station. They have a great community room. And, again, if any of those campuses or those offices are held, if they want to or they can, I don't know if the city ordinances would disallow it, but like a police station, they can. And
now, what about churches? Did you have any luck with churches, temples?
There is a church. There is a church not too far from me, that St. Dominic's, that has bees. And there's one of our members, she tends those bees at the church. They're there. They're, of course, on a hotel down in downtown Denver. There's a hotel that has them on top of there. And that was kind of an interesting story. They're trying to really, they're one of the oldest hotels in Denver, and like five-star, and they were trying to incorporate a greener approach to everything, and they wanted to have their own honey rather than having it in the individual serving bottles. So they asked us, and they asked one of our members, and I really wanted to have a group. They're a group called Earthlink, and they work with women, but I think both men and women, who are transitioning out of homeless. If we put the bees up on that roof, if these individuals could care for it, and then they could get a portion of the honey, and they could sell it as well. Well, that didn't really work out for, I think, a lot of, probably insurance reasons. So what the Brown Palace did instead is they gave to me, which I turned around, our Denver Bee, and we gave to Earthlink, two Langstroth hives. And so that community still gets to beekeep. It's just not on top of a hotel. And so it's a transferable skill. I think a lot of pastoral hobbies really build confidence because it's something that the person is doing one-on-one, and you have to think about these people were disenfranchised from life for one reason or the other, and they don't really get a chance to do anything with passion. They're worried about eating and where are they going to sleep. So the chance that they get to be in a beehive and be a part of something so positive and so uplifting, I thought was really important. The pathway, it would cut clear, that passion would cut clear a path for them, for their emotions. They could get to, they could be able to do something, and it would have such a positive manner.
You really went out and reached out to every possible organization and group that you thought would be open and receptive to working with you, and that's just really smart thinking. It's a really great way also to bring the community together because, you know, let's face it, beekeeping is not something that everybody does, but people are interested at least in how people do it and what's involved. Also, I think the public educational component is something that's very, very important, especially since the fact that there's such a huge decline in the honeybees, well, in the bee population, period. You ask the average person what they know about bees, and all they know is, oh, bees, they sting, or they make honey.
Right.
And that's basically about it. And the thing is that most people know that bees don't purposely go after you and attack you. They're more afraid of you than anything. They just, the only time that they do sting is if they are under attack or if you try to attack the hive. And that's basically it. Once they sting, that's it. And a lot of people just don't know that. They don't even see the bees most of the time when they're out in the field because, you know, the bees are doing their thing. Getting back to this whole situation with being fined, now at one point they threatened to put you in jail. Can you talk about that? And did you try to find a lawyer? And how did you go about trying to find help?
No, well, I think I don't think it probably would have ever come to that, but that was the condition of the cease and desist that I had to get rid of the hives or face, I think it was $999 or a year in jail. So that was the extreme of that. I doubt it would have ever come to that because, again, there was the hearing that I could get. And so I just had to go down, and it was $300, which – the zoning office was really great in Denver. Again, they gave me a hearing date, and then I said, okay, well, I'm going to take this to city council. I'm trying to find a city council member. She said, okay, find a city council member. She said, if your hearing date comes before it would go before city council, we can change your hearing date to push it further out. So they really worked with me in that. I mean, the woman that I worked with down there, she was great because it was going to be up in front of city council again on November 17th, but the hearing date was actually before that. So I got a letter. She had changed it. They booted it out, I think, until the following year. So I could have kept moving through the system had we not had a change right away. I mean, they had to follow the formalities. So that worked out in our favor. And so that's what we did. We did that, and again, it had to go through all sorts of zoning and committees, as it were. And they asked the questions, and then they came up and with where the hive would be, where the hive would sit, and all that sort of thing. So they came up with all of that, and then.
What about for new people that would like to take up beekeeping? Did they lay out any guidelines or any type of restrictions?
No, and see, that's where, again, that tremendous amount of responsibility I felt because they didn't ask anything of the beekeeper. They just said you can have two of them. You have to keep them in the back third of your lot. You needed a six-foot barrier between the abutting property and yours, but it could be natural. I mean, it was soft. It was a very soft ordinance. There wasn't a lot of restrictions other than have it in the back third of your lot. And I mean, there are a couple other details in there about having it near a walkway or such, but it was soft, and so I thought to myself, we have to police ourselves, and we have to make sure that the beekeepers that show up along the front range know what they're doing and are cognizant of not only good beekeeping practices, but that they need to be ambassadors at all times. That we can't have bees if we're going to be bullying with them. I know we had a situation come up that there was a gentleman, and beekeeping is legal in Denver, and he wanted them in a community garden, and one of the other gardeners said no, and he just was furious. And I said, I support the other gardener, and he was pretty upset with me, and I said, look, beekeeping is legal in Denver. We can't be bullying people. You want them in the community garden, you have to be respectful of the gardeners that have come before you. I said, get creative. A lot of people have had to. They've put them on roofs. They've found other properties to put them on. They've gotten creative. They still get to carry out their passion and their desire. They're just not beating anybody up over it. And I said, we have to do that. when it comes to getting swarms, that's a big thing now. I said you have to go out thinking that you're an ambassador. There's some individuals who say, oh, just show up and don't wear any gear and show them how docile bees are. Well, there's two ways to look at that. I think showing up and having protective gear oftentimes makes the homeowner a little bit more comfortable. And then you just take the bees away, no foul, no harm. Some people think you should show up, again, with just a bucket. If you're comfortable in doing that, that's fine. Either way, but just remember, however you show up, you're an ambassador and you don't want to make a situation. Swarms are safe. Swarms are stable. We make them unstable in varying degrees. So show up, again, be aware of how the community is going to view you. That's all we ask. And so I think I've been very obstinate with this and dedicated to that, is that we have somebody from the academic community once a month, because that person can ask whomever, Dr. Tu, Dr. Connor, they can ask them a difficult question. It might be a simple question at the get-go, but that is going to give that person a really solid foundation, because they're going to be asking questions and they're going to be getting answers. They're not going to be challenging anyone. Someone's not going to be offended by the question from the existing community. Because what can happen if you challenge existing beekeepers, I feel, and appear as though you're disregarding them, is that you can polarize the beekeeping community. And again, I go back to this, is that the beekeeping community, especially now the hobbyists, are completely underorganized. And as a voice, we have to be organized and we have to be as one. And if you have people that feel that, you know, they've been doing it for 20 years and now all of a sudden they're being disregarded, you don't want to do that. You want to give them respect, and in doing so you keep a one voice. Because, you know, as you know, talking to Tom Theobald, that one of the biggest issues right now is pesticides. And if we have a solid voice, there are no numbers out of the urban or hobby community. It's all out of the commercial community, where we get numbers about hive mortality. Well, hive mortality will be decreased with some solid approaches that don't require a ton of time. One of them is communities that support it. You have ongoing education in that community, and I mean from pundits. We have a bee yard now. I feel like this is so incredibly important, because there's hands-on learning out there. Every month we have a hive inspection. It's the same place, same hive, show up once a month. That's been 2.5 years of really hard work of getting that thing together. We have 14 hives out there. Once a month people get to come out and ask a million questions. They get to pick up hives. So that in and of itself is going to affect hive mortality. And then people that are already in the community can go out and say, this has been my experience, and it will be looked at and it will be respected. And so, again, it's just building momentum that's going to perpetuate us into the future, and hopefully decisions will be made that are healthy for bees and certainly for us through these approaches.
Now, who conducts the hive inspections at this point?
Me. Or we have a couple other beekeepers that will go out throughout the year if one of us can't. And each month, I think it's on the website as to what we're going to cover now. I mean, this just started. So we installed hives last Friday and Saturday, and that was so exhilarating because people showed up. We had packages. We did I like the passive approach where you take the queen out, you situate her, and then you just put the box in there, the package box, and then they emerge. And it was cold last Saturday here. And so the whole shaking method I've just never understood. And I have never done. You place them in there. After a few days, they all march out of there. They start to do what bees do. You remove it. Again, no harm, no foul. You haven't slammed bees through a small opening. And it was cold, so you were going to break up that cluster. It was interesting. In one of the installations, there was a gentleman in the group, and later on, he was really upset. He said, "You didn't brush off the queen cage to show that the queen was alive." And I said to him, this was the reason that I did that, and I wished you certainly could have asked that. There was probably about 100 people. We had two sessions. It ended up being three sessions because we had three packages. I said, I didn't knock all those bees off of that cage because it was cold, and she needed to maintain that heat. Mm-hmm. I said, so we placed it in there. I said, so I had to make a choice. Do we brush it off? I said, they certainly would have gathered around her. I said, or do we wait and say that was an option if it would have been a hotter day? You know? Mm-hmm. I said, those. I said, you could have brought that up. And I said, again, you could have pushed out more discussion. They would have started thinking more. That's what you want to do. So bring up a question. Challenge it. You know, if one of us don't know it, we'll say we don't know, but does anybody in here have an idea? I said, that gets people thinking, and it builds an encouragement. It builds empowerment. It was really successful. People were so funny. They just loved doing it. I didn't wear any gloves. Again, it was cold. The bees were very docile. We put them in, got the packages in, and I just got some fun emails. And people were very excited. They had gone right home. They'd gone to pick up their packages. And then they went right home and put them in. And that was really great, I have to say.
Now, in addition to, let's talk about the educational component. Now, do you teach beekeeping workshops to new or interested people that want to find out more about beekeeping?
Right. There's a class, the Botanic Gardens. We've done those. And then we'll have classes this summer because now we have this bee yard, and we'll have classes this summer. It's more hands-on because, you know, you can study theory until you're blue in the face,
mm-hmm.
and then you go out and you have the applied, and all of a sudden, you know, you have insects that are flying about you. A lot of people, their first instinct is a swat batch, which they think might sting them. And so it's people getting into being around them, you know, developing a sense, a cadence, understanding the cadence of the hive, becoming familiar with what it is. I mean, I think that there are very few facts around beekeeping, but there's a tremendous amount of hyperboles. You know, there's all sorts of things that people think and try this and squirt them with vanilla water, or, you know, I have different thoughts when it comes to feeding and different thoughts when it comes to hive hygiene. And, you know, people can shoot holes in them all they want. I'm going to keep doing it, and I will explain why I'm doing it. And if somebody wants to do it differently, the more power to them. Again, I have to think that we have to think about, now, every side of me in every direction, I live in a city, there are beekeepers. So I have to be considerate of how I'm keeping bees, whether I'm keeping them healthy, whether I'm ignoring them, because that's going to affect my beekeeping neighbors and the feral colonies. And it's not just about me. And if I'm busy and I'm not getting to them, I mean, bees need you when they need you, not when it's convenient for your schedule. So I have to be aware. You know, now there's a bigger population that I could affect adversely. So, like I said, we have a monthly meeting, and we've been really dedicated to having pundits from the academic community that will come. I mean, you can throw any question at them. They love them. They've, you know, they defended their book report, as it were. They've made it to the top of Everest. They understand entomology, and they love the questions. They love the intrigue. They like to see the interest that people are having and the fact that people are thinking, well, what happens if I do it this way? And again, giving respect to the community that's been here and been quiet, that perhaps there is a different way, and it's not against them in any way. It's being looked at in a different way. Times have changed. You know, there wasn't medication, and then there was, you know, in the start of the Varroa infestation or the tracheomite, you know, then we had the knee-jerk reaction of chemicals, and now people are like, well, wait a minute. We've been doing this for 40 years. Let's just stop and look at this for a second. Is there another way we can do this? Now you're getting people into holistic beekeeping. And, again, I think that when you have challenges and just disrespect, you're going to get polarization, and that's not going to do the beekeeping community any good at all.
No, of course.
Because the beekeeping community is going to go forth and probably be the one that leads the charge when it comes to pesticide. We see the effects immediately. Now, what I do in where I live a block away from a park, and I went to the park when they were spraying. I said, I like to walk in the park, but I don't want to walk here when you're spraying. Could you give me the spray schedule? It wasn't confrontational at all. The guy goes, oh, yeah, here's the spray schedule. So what I do is I net my hives the night before. And I know they're spraying down there. I net them I make it so they can get out. So certainly it's not going to get hot. Sometimes I put a portable shade. They have to sit in there for a day. But I've taken some responsibility.
Can't you get from the Department of Health a schedule as far as the general schedule for the summer?
I think you can. I just got the parks that were closest, the park that is closest to me.
Mm. Now, what about when they have these scheduled sprays, like take, for example, for West Nile virus? Can't you do anything so that they don't spray the area where you keep your bees? Because I know that they do that in some other areas, but you have to be registered with, I think, the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, and I don't know who else you need to contact, but I know that that's basically what you have to do. Has there been any mention of anything like that by you?
No, I just, you know, you do it in your area, find out when they're spraying. That's what I've done. Now, I'm sure when it gets to more, probably around the water areas, I'm not really close to any water. They'd probably be spraying more. That would probably be more of a concerted effort in those areas. But I just found out the spray schedule in my neighborhood. But, you know, there's no reason that you shouldn't do that. Does that answer your question?
Oh, of course, of course.
Okay.
Moving forward, in order to just make sure that people are doing the right thing and people are not abusing the privilege, what are some of the things that you'd like to see done so that the community can be very responsible but constructive?
Well, I don't know. I guess all I see is people putting efforts forth. We have a highway that we adopted, so we go out twice a year and show up in the community that way. So we're not just asking support of what we're doing, but we're showing that we're in support of the greater environment. So we're doing that. I think just staying abreast of what you're doing, asking questions, showing up, finding somebody in the beekeeping community. I always say this, if you find somebody in the beekeeping community that you resonate with and you work with, that's going to affect hive mortality just as much as, because it's difficult. It can be very difficult. You can do everything to the best of your ability or according to Hoyle, and your hive will die. This year, because there were so many new beekeepers, I think that we'll work on splitting hives, and so that we're not bringing in as many packages, that we're going to try to incorporate more of the DNA pool from the feral hives by splitting and then bringing up new queens, and now those queens are going to be mating with drones in the area. So doing that, like really promoting survivor stock rather than going, oh, they died, we'll have to get a new package this year. So really promoting survivor stock. And again, just being, there was a woman who told me that there was a gentleman, he works for the city of Denver, and she said he has bees in her backyard, and she said, oh, he throws a hive in there. But she said, I only see him a couple of times a year, and then they seem to always be dead. And, you know, she said, sometimes they'll make it, sometimes they don't. I think, you know, her saying something to him, maybe about his beekeeping approach or his methodologies, she certainly could just ask him, tell him she's concerned, they're dying out, what's that doing to the community at large? I think those kind of questions are certainly warranted, and I don't think they need to be asked in a threatening manner, but, you know, I'm concerned. And I think somebody would welcome that, hopefully, and they wouldn't feel challenged and wouldn't look at it adversely. You know, that they'd be like, okay, yeah, I got to be more of a part of this. I can't just let it go. I can't. It's not a bird feeder, as Tom Theobald says. You're not putting in a bird feeder. You have to be present with it. You have to be present with it. And you have to be there with it. And I saw that a few times last year, that people were very romantic in their notion, and they put bees in, and then they were having other people watch them. You know, they were asking. And that was a really great thing about this bee yard, is that people can come and they can ask questions and they can see it if they need to see it. But there was a couple of occasions where women were not, you know, everything was delivered to them for whatever reason. You know, somebody put the hive in for them, they watched. And then they wanted more help. And we, you know, whomever, you know, the other beekeeper said, no, you know, if you're going to beekeep, you got to, you know, it's a trial by fire here. You're going to have to do it. And they didn't do so good. You know, they left the honey supers on during the winter. They really weren't in the hive. And I'm sure a lot of it might be just trepidation when it, you know, they're fearful. But so hopefully this, having this bee yard, they can come, they can be nervous, but somebody will be there, and then they can go back in, because at that point their hive is more, is potentially dangerous if they're not going to care for it in the right way. And we don't want to, we don't want that to happen. And so it's, you know, it's people being up front, not letting people get by, encouraging, and having people understand what hive hygiene is. I really adhere to Brother Adam in that every 3 years, you should get rid of your hive. You should start to burn all the equipment because of the foul brood. You know, the most deleterious would be foul brood. Somebody called me the other day and said, well, can I wash out the hive? It had a dead out, and the queen had died. Again, I think that really has to do with just survivor stock and knowing how to perpetuate that. But somebody said, well, should I rinse the hive out with a 1 to 9 Clorox solution? And I said, what would be the point? I said, anything that's deleterious, such as the foul brood spore, you're not going to get rid of it by chemicals because it is resistant to that. And I said, you're not going to get rid of any parasites. So I said, you're wasting time and resources. And I said, so, you know, that's why we burn them every 3 years. So one box and the screen bottom board go in the third year. On the fourth year, it's the other deep and the inner cover in the top. So I think that, when, again, when people are in the inner city and they're having one or two hives, I said, get into a pattern. Get into, you know, get into a pattern and have your methodology. I said, we all have phones that take pictures. I said, and get a journal. Take photos. Write down in your journal what you saw. I said, you know, this is your experiment in your backyard. And I said, you'll
be able to. That's a really excellent suggestion.
Yeah, you mean a journal?
Well, people are constantly posting everything on Facebook as it is. I mean, you know, why not keep a journal of, especially if you're going to take care of bees? It's not a cheap hobby. Some
no.
people think, oh, you'll just get bees, like you'll buy a 99-cent goldfish in one of the pet shops. It's completely, completely different. It's a lot of responsibility. You really should have an understanding of bee anatomy and how bees function before you decide that you're going to undertake a hive or more than a hive. And
right.
some people just think, oh, you know, we'll just get some bees because the neighbor has them. And it's no, you're really doing more of a disservice to the bees than anything else. Did you reach out to anyone else in other communities, whether it's in the United States, outside the United States? Were there any books that you read that inspired you to take the course of action that you took?
No. I think it was, I mean, I have a long history of being in science, and I think that probably I implemented that more than anything. I worked bench chemistry and also did microbiology for years, so I think that for me, that's where the hygiene kicked in. You know, you definitely have to have a certain good practices when you're doing any type of assays or experiments that require logging things, when you're required to keep journals. So that part came from that aspect. And then I think that, again, it was just something that hit me when they said, yeah, you can keep your bees. I thought, oh, my God, there's all of these people coming up, and there's not going to be the immediate resources in the area. We have to organize this, or this could really go awry quickly, and Denver's going to... And see, what happens is, if we don't keep a hold of this, we are going to affect any community where there are groups of beekeepers that are trying to get the ordinance passed. So if we show up for poor beekeeping skills or poor hygiene management, and suddenly, you know, there's an outbreak of foul brood, and it's going to show up. We have a lot of responsibility in Denver to really keep control of this as best we can and show them, look, these are the efforts. This is where we're in the community. This is what we're trying to perpetuate. These are the good foundations that we're trying to build. These are the people that we bring in. They have access. The beekeepers have access to, you know, to equipment. Now, I think there's three different places that you can actually buy equipment that day. You're not having to mail away for it. You don't have to do a mail order. You can go and get it. You know, some of them are as basic as the co-ops, and then you have the high-end boutiques. at the co-op, it's not painted. It doesn't need to be painted. And it is what it is. So, okay, so you have, you know, that again, that's going to affect hive mortality. You have resources. You can go to a bee yard and have hands-on experience. There are several different vendors where you can get bee equipment. All of that's going to affect hive mortality. You know, you encourage perennials or bee-friendly plants in your community. We have a group, we passed out seeds a couple of meetings ago, and people just drop them in the alleyways. You know, nobody ever pulls out a sage or a lavender plant. You know, nobody pays attention to it. It's pretty, smells good. But again, you're putting more food in your environment. You're creating a healthier environment. I mean, the planet Earth is a plant-based biosphere. Everything depends on a plant, everything. And so we simultaneously try to encourage plants and kill them through herbicides. And plants, you know, have been very crafty through their years and creative through evolution, and they've employed a vast number of insects to move them around the planet. I mean, plants aren't going to give up. We do everything in our power to try to control them, to suppress them, to oppress them, and they keep popping up. I mean, so we have to understand that that's where a healthy environment comes. That's where you get your oxygen, you know, on the dark side of photosynthesis. That's where you get your raspberry. That's where you get your clothing. That's where you get medicines. So the fact that we're always just blasting nature, it's just an absurd thought because we're only destroying the environment, which we need.
Oh, exactly. So, since you've changed things for the city of Denver, have other communities reached out to seek your counsel as far as how they can go about dealing with some of these ridiculous ordinances?
Yes. I mean, there's little municipalities within the area, and groups of beekeepers go come and show up, and they're either able to speak or they're not. But I think one of the best things that we can do is be a group that, it doesn't matter if it's Denver or if it's Boulder, but it's a group that's positive, they're there for resources, and that you're showing by good example, we can have bees. We've had them for 2 years, and no one's been, you know, taken off into the nether regions by a swarm of bees. You know, everyone's just living as happily as they did before. You know, there are the few oddballs that are upset about bees, but the voices, I think their voices are kept down because we really try to educate on being cognizant of your neighbors, follow the zoning ordinance, do what that says, and be aware. People really don't notice when there are beehives in backyards. I mean, because bees don't interact with humans.
Well,
bees
they're
fly
their
up.
Own thing. Yeah, well, it's very interesting because even at some of the community gardens, the public gardens, there are people that will say, wow, they have hives, they're where? And when they finally see what they are, you wouldn't know what those boxes were unless you knew, you know, knew something about beekeeping. And it's just kind of interesting, you know, they kind of just blend in. And also the fact that people are under the assumption that, oh, if there's bees, you're definitely going to get stung. And we
right.
both know that that is not necessarily the case. Moving forward, you're very active with bee education and whatnot, but are you at any point going to publish a book about your experiences and also, you know, to help other communities that are trying to achieve what you have?
No, I
there's
I
really nothing out there.
It's more of a pamphlet.
I tell you.
I don't think it would be a book. No, I think that, again, I think what happens is if you have a group, and there are a few groups along the Front Range here, people go, they're encouraged about beekeeping, and then their municipalities aren't allowing it. I think it's just a matter of time that, you know, if we're on the peripheries, if we border those communities, which we do, and say, look, Denver or Aurora has had bees for X amount of years. There is absolutely no argument against them. I think it'll just they'll slowly knock over, but I think that it's imperative that we approach it from a positive angle and saying, okay, you can't keep bees in Thornton, Colorado, but you know what? You can keep them, you know, 5 miles north of you on some fields. That individual gets to beekeep. That Thornton community gets to see that they're, all the communities around it are supporting beekeeping, and the community is understanding it. It's becoming an integral part again. And I think that it'll just be a matter of time. I just think we have to stand there as the good example. And good examples come through continuing education and making available support and equipment and people understanding that bees aren't disposable, that if it doesn't work this year, you don't really have to put that much effort into them. You can just order a new package next year, that there's more involvement with the genetics as far as having our own survivor stock here and using that and utilizing that. So I think that the group would just become stronger. You know, the voice, the group will come stronger. That voice will coalesce. Again, I think if we respect those that were here before and their experience. You know, none of them may have been steeped heavily in the sciences, but they have the experience. And I think being respectful of that, that voice will stay together and it won't be polarized. Because when you get polarization is where the other side gets you. Because you're not a unified voice, and so not everybody will be together because there's ego in there. You take out the ego and you keep your objective, you get a lot done.
Oh, of course. Do you have any last-minute advice to anyone who would like to start a bee club in their community and to just raise more awareness, whether it's about bees in general or to get people to understand that pesticides are really doing a number on the bees, to just get something going in their community?
I think finding someone in the community, in the city council, that is sympathetic. And I think it's, you know, who we vote in. I mean, I think it's really right now we can start to hold candidates' feet to the fire and say, you know, you're worried about drunk drivers, you're worried about kids wearing seatbelts, but, you know, you're spewing. In the U.S. alone, we use 190 million pounds of Roundup a year. And we don't think twice that that's having an effect on expectant mothers, on animals, on families in general, people in general. We never think twice about that. But, boy, if somebody's caught and they've been, and again, I don't mitigate the horrendous things that can happen through drunk driving, but it's drunk drivers, it's gang issues, but we never stop and go, wow, we've just spewed this amount of known carcinogens across the environment, and we're not thinking twice.
And no, so we're not. Yeah.
I think that we're poised, and that's what I mean. We can't be polarized as a group of as beekeepers. We can't be polarized. It's imperative that that voice is strong, because it's we see first line what happens. I mean, there were four beekeepers in Denver last year who called frantically because they were watching bees die in front of their hives, because, you know, bees are flower specific. They were out. They were in the pathway of a lawn applicator or at the park, and they came back and died. They saw the effect. Well, that's going to affect that bee immediately. If it's an organophosphate, it's going to go into the fat of a child.
Oh, of course. All these chemicals, we've been trying to raise as much awareness as possible, and that is something that everybody really needs to think about, especially when it comes to bees. Mary Gail, I just want to say thank you so much for joining me on the show today, and thank you so much for sharing your experience. It's really been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thanks very much.
And can you just give your website for our audience so that if anyone has any questions, they can get in touch with you?
Uh-huh. It's denverbee.org.
Thank you so much, Mary Gail. And folks, thank you for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic Bee Radio Show. Have a great afternoon.